Shall we start talking about how you ever became a liberal, Dame Marjorie? I mean, you couldn't have been anything else, could you?
Well, very difficult with my family background. Yes, well...
You really inherit it, don't you? I mean, both your parents were liberals.
I can begin with a few words about 1902 and 1904.
Fine, do that.
That'd be a good thing. My first recollection of... Is it coming through?
It's on now, yes, it's fine.
My first recollection of liberalism was... I think the 1902 election, when there was bitter feelings in this country about who was to blame with the Jameson raid. It got so bad, which is very rare in British politics, that people would not meet each other at dinner. And my father is about the only liberal in Sussex, was, of course, an anathema. And I learned how to stand up for one's principles against social pressures. Then in 1904, I think the divisions were probably mostly on the Education Acts, in which the bulk of the Free Church vote went, of course, enthusiastically behind the Liberals. And I learned then of how it was that religion could mix itself up in politics. And then in 1906, my father decided to stand for the second time as Liberal candidate in a constituency which had never known anything but Conservative MPs. And I got a grueling education in canvassing all day and being on hand in village meetings in case with a very newfangled form of transport, the motor car, was set against the old transport of a dog cart. The earlier experience is where, of course, that when canvassed all day in a couple of villages and was attended the village meeting, and my first experience of speaking was when the woman beside me said, "Your father's gone on to the next meeting and taken your mother. You're the only member of the family, so you must make the vote of thanks." I gasped, "I can't." And at that moment, my father's friend, who'd carried on the meeting, sat down and I got up.
And that was your first political speech, was it, Dan? You hadn't spoken before.
I never opened my mouth before. Mm.
That's splendid. Yeah. Your father stood in 1900 as well as in 1960.
Well, my brother and I had helped him, so we had, so to speak, second-hand experience. Mm. And in the 1960 election, when he won, the popular expression was, "Well, we've got them in." Helped by his wife, helped by his son and daughter, and helped by two brothers, one of whom, and my godfather. He was at last successful. I mention the godfather because at the counter there was the usual halter of conservative counters helping each other. And my godfather, Pulling, intervened to the fury of the conservative agent, who said, "What are you doing, sir, here? Who are you?" "I am the Lord Chancellor's aide." "What was the Lord?" I am barrister, or
yes,
legal advisor to the Lord Chancellor on bills before Parliament."
So your father got in.
My father got in. He had on a most disreputable raiment, which was a coat of his own design, which kept his feet very warm in with a coat, with a dogcart, very drafty vehicle. He was sitting calmly smoking his pipe when I dashed in and I said, "Father, you're ill." "Nonsense," he said, very much annoyed, apparently. And we went back. I'd heard it whispered and thought he ought to be warned. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody's mouth so wide open as my brother's, as he yelled, was here and there, yelled congratulations. And a pathetic incident was that we caught sight, as we left the counting place, of the Conservative candidates carriage and pair already decorated for victory.
How splendid.
And that afternoon, the school was Danehill was 5 minutes walk from the house. And the children, without any instigation, gave themselves a holiday and walked up to offer her congratulations. Well, then, of course, he lost it in 1910. The Conservatives wouldn't be caught again.
What about you? I mean, it never occurred to you to be anything but liberal yourself.
No, I don't think it ever did. You see, my introduction, there was no Labour Party. So you really were for or against reform.
Yes.
It was much easier. You see, today the young can be tempted, shall we say, by either Labour or Communist. And, of course, in my day, when I went up to college, the saying was, if you aren't a Liberal at college, you'll be a hopeless fuddy-duddy when you're 40.
Yes.
Now, of course, one has to take one's grandchildren as either Labour or Communist, or they'll be awful back numbers by the time they're 40.
Did you do any politics, political work at Newnham?
Yes.
And did you speak at the debates and things like that?
Newnham, I don't know if other colleges had it, but we had a tremendously alive political society, arranged so that either Liberal or Conservative ran the government a term at a time. We had a cabinet, we introduced bills, we debated bills. We had really not only an ideal contest, but we had all the machinery.
It was almost like an imitation parliament.
Which was, you see. There was a parliament, there was a cabinet, there was the introduction of bills, which were always, of course, or practically always, as far as I remember, the ones that were being introduced in Parliament were therefore debated.
So you spoke at that quite a lot?
Spoke at that, yes. And I think the only difference, no, there are two differences between us and today. We were quite as keen on reforming the world, and we were quite as sure that we knew how to do it. But we it never crossed our minds that people would take any notice until we'd had some years' experience in the real world. We had all the fun, we had the stimulus, but we really didn't think that people who'd been out in the world for some years were going to pay much attention to our theoretic.
So what were you? Were you Chancellor of the Exchequer or what?
I don't remember what, and I think education, I think, was what I was keenest about. You see, having come across it very vividly here, where we have a big non-conformist vote. Deplorably teetotal from my father's point of view.
you weren't really influenced by books much, were you, at all? I mean, you never... I mean, you couldn't... don't owe your liberalism to that.
No, I don't think I was. Because when I went up to Cambridge and was asked what subject I wanted, I said, something stiff. I've never been to school. I must have some discipline. Can't do mathematics. History, I don't suppose I used the expression, I could get away with. I was completely fluent, bilingual, really, in French, and very fluent in German. So ancient languages didn't appeal to me. And it really struck me that what I'd better do was to have some discipline. I'd only been at home. And so I chose, was regrettable, of course, consequences. But I did get through.
What did you read? You read
classics,
yes. Mm. But you're not the sort of liberal who owes your liberalism to Mill's Liberty, for instance. I mean,
no, it was being lived the whole time around me, you see.
Yes, absolutely. So how did you first get connected with the Liberal Party yourself? I mean, what?
You see, Asquith came down and spoke for my father, and my mother was a very active member of the Women's Liberal Federation, and we had our Women's Liberal Associations here. So I can't remember when except for that unexpected effort at speaking.
You just grew into it,
you see. And my mother, I'm not sure now, looking back, whether it wasn't purposely, sent me to deputise for her where she could, you know, opening a bazaar or entertaining people.
So you became a member, did you, of the Women's
Liberal
Federation?
Oh, yes, as soon as I was older now.
Did you really?
Yes.
What exactly was the Women's Liberal Federation? What did that involve you with?
Well, really, it was, as all women's organisations were then, supplying food to the men.
I mean, was it a sort of Liberal Party Primrose League, or did it differ from the Primrose League?
Well, it differed, I think it differed from the Primrose League, as far as I could make out, by being really political and not only social. Well, of course, that's perhaps unfair to the Primrose League, but it did seem to us that it was mostly entertaining people who socially would want to be entertained by you.
Yeah, you mean the Primrose League was?
Primrose League.
Whereas in the Women's...
In the Women's Liberal, you had to have either a connection with a keen Liberal as husband, father, brother, or where you got keen yourself. But you always had to have some interest in politics.
So how did they find out whether you had? I mean, did you have to sort of go on a course to belong?
No.
Or how did you get in?
If you were idiotic enough to belong to the Liberal Party, you merely joined it.
Yes, I see. You just sort of signed, you just gave your money.
Nobody, you paid your money because nobody, as you would get no social prestige at all by joining, you only joined if you believed in it.
Yes, that's interesting. In contrast to the Primrose League.
Well, it seemed to us that...
I'm sure that's right. So, was the Women's Liberal Federation, did it have local branches everywhere then?
Yes, and we've still got them.
And you joined the local branch here, did you?
I joined the local branch here. Yes. And then when my father, for a short time, was Member of Parliament, I joined headquarters and was on the committee for a long time, was president.
The National Committee, that
is. The National Committee, which ended, or nearly ended, in a very comic incident. I'd been president for 1 year, and women elected generally stood for two. And at the end of one, and I said, just as we finished the committee, I'm not standing next year. Gasp of surprise, and then, but you must. You're always elected for 2 years. I have served 1 year with two members of the executive being extremely rude, if not insolent. And having stood it for 1 year, I see no reason why I should stand it for another. Dead silence. And I rose. And the two culprits rose and came over and apologized.
Did they really? And you agreed to stand for the second year?
If I would stand and beg me to stand for the second year.
Did they really? What, I don't want to ask who they were or anything, but what were the sort of issues?
Well, I think I must tell you.
You'd rather, I'll switch off, shall I?
Well.
What sort of dates?
I suppose it would be most likely when my father was MP.
We could easily find that out.
Six and ten.
Yes. So anyway, you had arguments about suffrage inside the
Women's
Federation.
Oh, yes. In fact, my mother and a very notable woman here founded a liberal branch of the Women's Liberal Association.
Yes.
This machine on again?
It's on now, yes.
The Liberal Women's Liberals, Women's Suffrage Liberal Association.
I see, yes.
And you see, at the same time, Lady Frances Balfour was doing the same thing within the Conservative Party.
So there was a clash, really, for you, was there? between suffrage and being in the Women's Liberal Federation?
Very much, you see. Yeah. In fact, I stood for two simultaneous elections to get back onto the executive of the Women's Liberal and to get back onto the executive of the National Union of Suffrage Societies. Mm. And was deeply censored by both, who said I couldn't possibly stand for the Women's Liberal without doing great harm to the cause with my violent suffrage opinions or non-violent. And the National Union said I should be handicapping them very much because of my extreme political views. And I went ahead and got on both.
How maddening, Paul.
It was great fun.
What did you actually do in the Women's Liberal Federation? Was it just really meetings and lectures and speeches?
Backing the party in any way you could. We did all the ordinary things like providing tea and whatnot.
But also speaking.
But also, very good speakers. Well, no one, I think the only more brilliant speaker I've known than Lady Violet was really Winston Churchill. Mm. And you see, she would go and speak for any Liberal candidate. I went and spoke for a lot of them, and we canvassed. But
on the whole, the sort of women who were active in the Women's Liberal Federation were suffrage women, were they? I mean,
curiously enough, not.
Oh.
Because party loyalty had existed for a long time, and this was a new idea. In theory, yes, but not at that particular moment. It never was the right moment, you see, because were distracting people from another.
Yes, and of course, yes, and loyalty to Asquith makes it difficult, doesn't it, really, to...
That's what shook Lady Violet at this memorable interview. I said, I don't think you realise, Lady Violet, how difficult it is for a woman to keep loyal to Asquith, who thinks she's not intelligent enough to exercise the vote.
Yes. Lady Violet's views are quite common, of course, at that time, aren't they? I mean, she was a sort of elite person who could get everything she wanted without the vote, I suppose.
Yes, exactly. You see, she was like nearly all the... Look at the pigeons, aren't they? Oh, they've just disappeared, but they'll be coming around in a minute. Look at them, there they are.
Oh, yes.
They come around every afternoon.
Yes.
See it? No, I've broken.
We were just talking about Lady Violet.
You see, it really has been, I think, the greatest disaster in that these two brilliant women, and both of I have served for a long time on the executive of Lady Violet, and Megan came down to all my elections, my five elections. They couldn't...
You were saying what a tragedy it was?
In the war, do you remember when the break between Asquith and Lloyd George. My private opinion, I've never seen it anywhere else, was that Asquith was a big enough man to have served with or under Lloyd. Well, he was already working with under Lloyd George. I don't think from the little I knew him, he seemed quite big enough in a crisis not to bother about personal things. But his friends persuaded him that he couldn't serve under a man like Lloyd George. And unfortunately, both these brilliant women never until long after tried to make a career for themselves, but were absolutely devoted to their fathers and fought for them tooth and nail. With the result, they created a cleft in the Liberal Party which destroyed it.
It's very interesting, yes. Yes. You think the women really did quite a lot of harm?
I think those his own friends, first of all.
Yes.
But then the two daughters kept it alive.
Did they? Did they actually dislike each other, these two? Did they?
And you see, both had really given up what could have been a brilliant political career.
For their fathers. That's interesting. But could we just talk a little bit about adult suffrage? Because it is rather interesting. I mean, the Liberal Party, clearly in retrospect, could only go for a democratic extension of the suffrage, and that cuts across the limited franchise extension that both you and Mrs. Pankhurst were campaigning for. Now that's looking at it in looking from hindsight. Why is this wrong? Why is this a wrong way of looking at it? Do you think? Because I mean, you never thought of going for adult suffrage in the women's movement, did you?
Really? Yes. Oh yes.
Did you?
We had discussions after discussions. We found that the antagonism of men as men was much more formidable than the objection to any one form of suffrage. And we had to, you see, we had to reckon what support we had if we adopted adult, which was considered very revolutionary. I mean, it's all very well to have a thing on your party in theory. It's very different, as we know now, by our prison government in various directions. It's very difficult to get wholehearted support for a new idea. And I think, I can't remember how Acts of Parliament, the dates in which specials were passed, but the Liberal Party was far more keen on other things than it was on adult suffrage.
Why, actually? Because the Liberal Party had been identified with franchise extension all the way through the 19th century. Why doesn't it go further? Is it just that you've got down to the dregs, so to speak?
I think you've got down to people whom people already enfranchised considered were not a politically adult, and I think also, yes, the famous phrase was, hadn't as big a state in the country. You see, the contribution of low-paid men who'd left school at best at 14, their stake in the country wasn't considered by the manufacturers and professional classes as really valuable.
Also, I suppose you're not sure that people right at the bottom of society will vote Liberal.
It's
the respectable working man, middle class, lower middle class, they'll vote Liberal, right? But I suppose you might get sort of lumpen proletariat.
Yes, the lumpen proletariat certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't. In fact, you see, even when I fought my Richmond addition, 10-shilling notes were passing quite freely in public houses.
Why did Lloyd George, well, Winston Churchill particularly, but Lloyd George as well, I think, go against Conciliation Bill in 1910, do you think? Because it's not democratic enough. Is that just an excuse, do you think?
I don't think so.
I mean, a lot of people used adult suffrage as an an alleged support for adult suffrage as an excuse.
That, according to my father, was certainly the case with MPs. Mrs. Fawcett said of him, he's the best friend of woman suffrage in the House. And when I think she was asked by someone why, he tells me the truth.
So you really have, you know, you're very much bred into the Liberal Party from the beginning. Really.
Yes.
So what happens, what sort of line do you take in the Asquith versus Lloyd George antagonism? I mean, you go along with Asquith, don't you, really, after 1916?
Yes.
Is that right? I don't want to put words in your mouth. I mean, how did that affect you, that Asquith-Lloyd George split?
You see, I don't remember it as being at all acute until Asquith was forced to resign. It wasn't really.
No.
It didn't seem to me at all important before that. I mean, I suppose you always have rival leaderships. I mean, it didn't strike me more than people are annoyed now by Heath and Thatcher.
No, no. So when it comes to choosing in 1918, whether you're an Asquithian Liberal or a coalitionist Liberal, you don't have any hesitation in being an independent Liberal, I mean an Asquithian Liberal, is that
no.
Right? And that was your father's position, was it?
Yes, I think. Father lamented, I think he only did it after this, he said, what a pity Asquith hasn't any public appeal.
He couldn't project himself.
He couldn't. No, he was. He was too intellectual. He was. I think you'll see. I've seen Asquith. I've seen Lloyd George go into a packed meeting that was against him because of something he'd failed to do. And by the end of the meeting, he was getting a stand-up cheer. And he hadn't given them a halfpenny. And another occasion, my father was feeling very keen about something. And Lloyd George said he would have a deputation. The deputation went in very annoyed and came out a short time afterwards with as far as father could tell, he was the only one of the deputation who didn't leave smiling because Lloyd George hadn't given them anything at all of what I went in. Anyway, he may have come out smiling, but if it was, it was for quite different reasons. I think Father would come out smiling.
So,
he had the most marvellous eyes.
Sorry.
No, I was only thinking, perhaps this is the place to say how extraordinarily better educated in politics I think people were by going to meetings than by the stuff. I suppose it reaches new people, ITV and whatnot, But I've seen Runciman addressed an enormous meeting with university standard economics on free trade and protection. But it really, I think, without, as I've been to the university, I don't willingly around them, but it really seemed to me, even at the time.
That's partly because there's so little else to do, I suppose.
Of course,
you get
I mean,
interested in politics.
A political meeting in a village got everybody. It was in the evening. If it was in the half the year, it was in the dark. And much better attended, because you could stand in the dark and not be seen by your landlord.
That's in Sussex.
And there would be meetings in the village hall in which the squire and agent of the Conservative Party would sit in the front row. Any questions? Nobody would get up, and the meeting would end, if with any applause, only two or three of the known radicals, and therefore they couldn't save their skins by not doing. And as you went out, people, I would follow my husband and say, "Well done, sir. Well done, sir." And a group of people might be waiting in the dark outside until the squire had taken himself home, and then come and ask my father questions. Mm. Was, yes, mm. Oh, such a different world.
Yes, of course, that reminds me, one of the problems about adult suffrage as far as women's movements are concerned is that it's landing yourself unnecessarily with an unpopular cause, isn't it? I mean,
yes.
You've got to fight for adult suffrage, perhaps, and you also, if you go for adult suffrage, you're going to lose those Conservative women, aren't you?
Yes.
Whose influence is much more important than the influence of the cooperative women or working women.
Yes.
So it's a difficult thing.
It really was a very difficult, and we decided. You see, I think we saved our honesty by always asking for the franchise, as it was or as it might be. Mm. I mean, we always asked for equality.
Yes, in any circumstances.
And that, we thought, was that kept the Conservative women and showed our loyalty to principle.
And enable you to have a single-minded campaign.
And we had a single-minded campaign, because we were already pledged to supporting any wider measure that was put to the House.
The trouble is, though, that does hamstring you in relation to the party system to some extent,
yes,
doesn't it?
I mean, it does.
You're trying to run a non-party campaign in basically a system
we tried, you see. We always called it an all-party campaign.
Mm. Mm.
But very difficult.
Very difficult, yes. Anyway, can we move forward and talk about Birmingham?
Oh!
And how did you... How did you get chosen, first of all, as a candidate, Liberal candidate in Birmingham?
I suppose there was a very keen Liberal editor who
Birmingham newspaper, was it?
Yes, running the Liberal newspaper. And he wrote to me and said, would I agree to stand as he would like me to go up and meet the selection committee, as he thought I'd make a very good candidate, I suppose. And so I went up, and I had the letter at Birmingham saying it was the best selection and most enthusiastic they'd had for some time and so on. And I stayed with a very important Liberal widow up there and got introduced, and slogged away at the usual canvassing.
Because was it embarrassing for you as a woman doing what was still then a male activity, really? I mean,
well, I suppose, shall I say, I've been hardened to it, because round here, canvassing for my father, I went into the local pubs. My granddaughter goes in to drink with her friends. But, of course, I couldn't go into a pub except on with a sheaf of canvassing things to have an enthusiastic welcome from the man who was running the pub because of his hatred of the brewers who were running him as cheaply as possible with as much gain to themselves. So I knew if I faced the unusual habit of walking alone into a pub.
So it didn't worry you as much as quite a lot of women candidates must have been in 1918. You were more inured to it.
I was more inured. I canvassed for my father, you see, so I knew the technique. And as I say, I had to go into unusual surroundings. Mm.
Do you think you were a bit regarded like a monkey doing tricks in the sense of,
I expect
this
that.
Is a woman, you know, doing this?
Yes, yes.
Do you
well,
remember
I suppose
anything?
So.
Yes.
I think really what I was protected by was that it was such a habit to go canvassing, that whether I was doing it for myself or anybody else didn't really much matter. You see, I'd had very strict training.
Mm. And was there any violence in the campaign that you remember? I mean, in Birmingham?
There was so little. I don't think there was.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a couple of men may have had at it sometimes, but you never thought of violence.
No. So anyway, you never really expected to get in, did you?
No. Oh, no, I was quite sure. I think it was just as well I didn't get in for family and so on, and allowance. But I can't remember. There was only one occasion when I was offered a seat, which was winnable, I mean, looking at it. And that year was the only year when I'd been ill, I think.
Which seat was that, Dame Marjorie?
If you can check the year that we lost free trade in Canada.
Oh, yes.
And it was that election.
You actually got round to standing, did you?
No, I got a heart. I strained my heart somehow and wasn't fit to stand. And that's the only time I've been offered a seat that was reasonably.
Yes. Which seat was it actually?
No.
Doesn't matter. I just wondered if
yes.
Well, you just got. They just made an approach.
I had to turn it down because I couldn't undertake an immediate campaign.
Mm.
Perhaps it wasn't winnable, but it. And we lost free trade for protection for Chamberlain's empire protection.
That wouldn't be 1931, would it? The 1931 crisis.
Yeah, something like that. It must have been.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. I mean, that is one of the great problems, isn't it, about women in politics between the wars. They never get a good seat, do they? They never get offered a good candidature for a good seat. That's the
tragedy. No.
And that really was your problem as well.
Yes. I must say I took them without... You see, it suited me. It was campaigning for equality with women. It gave me plenty to do for the Liberal Party. And it suited me being married to a barrister in London. Mm-hmm. You see, and I had a child. There were four good reasons why I should fight for liberals, but four heavy disadvantages. Mm-hmm. You see, he'd have got home to Putney when I was warmly ensconced in the House of Commons, and we couldn't have, it's like the people complaining today.
Yes, you would have led separate lives.
Separate lives.
Yes. In a way, to get women involved in Parliament, you've got to really alter Parliament much more than people ever thought, haven't you? I mean, you've got to change its hours, everything.
But you know, what was on the wireless this morning? Oh, Shelley Williams.
Oh, yes, she was good, wasn't she?
She was good, but she was wrong in this way. Mm. Parliament is having too much to do now because a government with a majority of one is trying to push through revolutionary schemes which have been voted against 3-1.
Yes, well, still there is. I see the point. But I mean, there is a continuous build-up of business in any circumstances.
Well, you see, everything they do adds another 100,000 to civil servants.
Yes.
And that is going to cost you time.
Yes. Of course, Lady Astor could do it because she had all her servants and money and so on. Eleanor Rathbone could do it because she had Elizabeth McAdam and a private income.
And who was the woman who defeated me at Hamel Heston, the wife of a lord?
Lady Terrington, was it? I know the one you mean, I think. Yes.
Well, you see, she had a house and flat. Next door to the House of Commons. I mean, she could run in and give the child tea. She could run in to kiss him goodnight. As it happened, it was all, and with plenty of servants, of course, which one had been.
Yes. But anyway, Birmingham was really a sort of... And what you're really aiming to do is to get people used to seeing women
That was the only thing that I could do.
Well, why didn't you stick to Lady Wood then? And what isn't there something to be said for building up?
Oh, yes, of course. That's what I tell the women who want to stand today. Don't think you can get in the first time, but stick to it until you're really well known. Mm.
But you gave up Lady Wood, I suppose, because it was an inconvenience.
Very inconvenient, you see, a long way off.
Yes.
And also, of course, for a southerner, I think it's rather absurd to attack a seat where you're not known, where you don't live, and which is in a part of the country so different. Look at that.
Think
of Birmingham.
The next one's Richmond, isn't it? Or is there another one between? I can't remember offhand.
I'll have to see that. I don't remember the dates.
Not why I can look that in your biography. But I mean, you certainly do stand in 1922 for Richmond, don't you? How did you get invited there then?
Well, you see, I was living in Putney and helping local liberal associations in the constituencies round. And as it was a hopeless seat, they were glad to get a neighbour who would accept it. It was very interesting. Because it was intensely conservative. And yes, it was there. I think the only possible election in which my husband helped me.
Oh, because you were involved with Rome, you mean, the Rome Congress?
Yes, I was.
Yes.
And he'd always thoroughly approved after the war, not before, after the war, of my opinions on one condition, that he wasn't asked to go to meetings, which he had a horror. But in a foggy winter, he came to my meetings and stayed, and he, a charming Scotsman who always called me Mistress Ashby, would keep a meeting going until I'd worked my way through the fog from the previous meeting.
But again, you were an Asquithian liberal in 1922.
Yes.
Again, yes. Well, now, how did you get involved in all that business leading to the Yellow Book? I mean, you must have been thinking about...
To what?
To the Yellow Book. How did you get involved in that?
Do you know, I haven't a clue. Knowing that I was closely involved with Lloyd George, and I haven't had time to look at it, so I can't remember.